Today's podcast is brought to you by Howie's new book, Paperboy. To order today, go to HowieCarshow.com and click on store.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria studio, it's the Grace Curley Show.
We got to bring in a new voice, a young voice, a rising voice, Grace Curley.
You can read Grace's work in the Boston Herald and The Spectator.
Especially Grace. Grace, stand up.
Here's the millennial with the mic, Grace Curley.
Hello, everyone. This is the Grace Curley Show. I'm not Grace Curley. I'm the honorary millennial with a mic, Aaron Chadbourne, coming to you live today. It is Thursday. It's raining. I hate spring. I don't know. There are a lot of people who wait all year for spring. They're full of hope and optimism. I am not one of those people. I think it's rainy. It's muddy. It's gross. I'm not a big fan of the spring. I like summer. I like fall. Give me winter. But spring's got nothing. Although, did you hear the news, Jared? Sam Bankman-Fried officially sentenced to 25 years in prison for being a crook. I mean, here's the massive crook. 25 years. Did you think it was going to be more or less?
I thought it was going to be a lot less than that.
Because they were saying he faced up to 100 years, and his lawyers were making some argument that crypto has done so well recently that really his investors didn't lose that much.
His sentence will be served virtually on a server somewhere.
He's blockchaining his sentence.
Do you think he's going to get a special vegan meals in this prison?
I just want to be the first to say, though, that Sam Bankman-Fried did not kill himself. Because, like, whatever happened to all of the money that he donated to all of these Democratic lawmakers? Like, did they give it back? Like, did they return it to the investors? Like, it was money that he basically stole. I mean, it's very interesting. It's very Bernie Madoff-esque, right? Like you tell people that you're going to invest it, but you just keep, you know, paying other bills out of what was supposed to be quote unquote invested, the depositors, the investors. Like it was a huge scam. And he was held in such high regard by polite society, largely because he was writing big campaign checks and he was lying to them about, you know, all of the things having to do with being a good company, and he just said all the right things, which I guess today would be like if you were going to be running your company around corporate social responsibility and DEI, that would be the right thing. That would get you in the right circles, as well as writing these checks, that which is people's hard-earned money that they invested with him that he then went and gave away to. We got to look and see. I'm really curious now. I want to see what's going to happen if the money's been paid back. I think some people... Do they do this thing where they don't necessarily return the money? They'll like donate the money to a nonprofit. But if it was your money that was stolen and then given to a politician, does it make you feel better that they donated it to charity? No, you want the money back. And so the creditors, the investors, well, Sam Bankman-Fried, 25 years. I think too bad that we should have had that at the poll question to ask if people thought it should be more than 25 years, less, too late. We already got a poll question. It's a pretty good one. I did tell you, Jared, yesterday that I would stop talking about Ronna McDaniel because I thought the story was over. However, I did give myself a carve out. I said, like, if some people are exposed as liars or if we learn more about how much she's getting paid, like, I might come back for it. And this is my favorite wrinkle in the story so far. Because it was MSNBC that was the most up in arms about the hiring of Ronna McDaniel and the MSNBC talent. And now, come to find out, originally, so Ronna McDaniel, she stepped down as chair of the RNC because Donald Trump said he didn't want her anymore and he wanted to replace her. So she said, fine, you don't want me. I don't want to be here. She then goes and she shops around with all these news organizations that want to give her a contract because they like her to be a political analyst. She's the former head of the RNC. Why not? NBC was courting her. And NBC, she said to NBC, great, I'll come on NBC, but I don't want to be on MSNBC. They're going to be ugly to me. Like, they're not going to want me anyway. Like, you know, I'll just do NBC. NBC offered her more money and said, we'll pay you more if you agree to go on MSNBC as well. And MSNBC president Rashida Jones, as reported by the Washington Post today, MSNBC president Rashida Jones participated in recruiting former RNC chair Ronna McDaniel, and then they increased her contract if she agreed to go on it. And so listen, the head of MSNBC over the weekend was privately telling all of these hosts that were in open revolt that don't worry, Irana's not coming on MSNBC after she cut a deal to pay her more money. They had to twist her arm and convince her that she would go on MSNBC in the first place. Ronan McDaniel actually said, I don't think I'm going to go there. They said, look, we'll make it worth your while. We'll pay you more money. They had a one-on-one sit down with the head of MSNBC. And then they act like Ronna was the one that did something wrong, which, to be fair, she did. She shouldn't have trusted NBC. If you had other options, you should have taken them. Maybe it was the money. Maybe the money was good. Maybe they offered more. Maybe the MSNBC money. But they made you look a fool, Ronna McDaniel. Not that you needed to be look any more of one. I've always thought that about you. However, don't do business with someone you can't trust. NBC was always a bad business partner. And then for them to, like, this is the epic setup. They pay you off. They give you even more money because you're bought and paid for. So you've shown that's where your loyalty is. You agree to go on MSNBC, and then MSNBC is the one that leads to your demise and your firing. What is the mood like at MSNBC today? Has it gotten any better, Jared? I don't watch it, and I appreciate that you look into it for me.
All I saw was Joe Scarborough having a regular Joe Scarborough-esque morning. I haven't seen anything going on today, but I'm sure they're celebratory as much as they can be because they're just miserable people. I mean, they can't be happy unless they're unhappy, I guess. Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, well, let's check in. Let's check in and see what the mood is over with, I guess, Joe and Mika. They're a good bellwether for the mood at MSNBC. Let's take cut two.
And the problem that we're seeing right now is you have a lot of people on the media that leans to the right and has that take, is that they are right now cutting down people for speaking their mind.
They are right now
cutting down people who speak their mind despite who pays them.
They are
proving that they take one for the team every day. Well, you don't know what you're watching.
Well, and they actually admitted over the past week. They said, again. They said, I would never say anything that my boss doesn't want me to say. I would never speak my mind. No, they literally said that on the air. They called it insubordination, and they assured their viewers that they would never speak their mind.
Ever.
If their boss didn't want them to speak their mind.
No core values.
Huh. I mean, it's really interesting because wasn't it Joe and Mika and Chuck Todd and all the others that said you can't trust Ronna McDaniel because now she's getting paid by someone, so that's going to influence who she speaks for. Now they're upset when the Fox News hosts are calling them out for speaking out and saying, you know, you're really the inmates running the asylum. I love it. Like, that's the thing here, is that they have such a warped sense of reality and what people think that they do think they're in charge. They think that they boss around the company, and they think that it doesn't affect them. Like, it's so, like, they're trying to have it both ways. Am I wrong? Like, they're trying to have it both ways. I just don't get it. Like, I really don't. Maybe I should start watching their show because it is entertaining. I do. Like, I thought they'd be calm and chill, but they can't take the criticism. They're so fragile that any of that criticism, which they are chief among hurling the insults and being unfair to conservatives. I did think what you told me earlier, Jared, though, was amusing. Let's take cut three.
Outside of this, I get off the air. And I just don't talk politics. But if I'm walking through an airport and somebody makes the mistake of saying I used to like you when you were a conservative.
Don't please stop saying that.
Paul. Don't do that.
Oh, please don't say that. Oh, please don't say I used to like you when you were a conservative. I mean, first of all, do you believe, Jared, that he doesn't talk politics after he gets off the air?
Not at all.
Because I'm only a fill-in host, right? I have a real day job. I sell real estate. I do a bunch of other stuff. I talk politics all the time. People come up to me to talk politics, whether they agree with me, disagree with me. They know that's what I'm there for. Also, remind me, who does Joe Scarborough spend his free time with when he's not on the air?
I believe that would be Mika, would it not be?
Mika Brzezinski. Do you think that they just don't have any political pillow talk between them? I mean, they must, right? They were so obsessed with Donald Trump before when they were friends with Donald Trump, when they liked him and they had him on and you know, they were in the tank. And then they had some sort of personal falling out with him and they became, you know, Trump derangement syndrome. Of course he talks politics when he's off the air. I don't understand it. But I think this thing, I hate people that come up and tell me, I used to like you when you were a conservative, right? Like what? Like, first of all, you and I debated this off the air. You don't think anyone actually recognizes him and comes up to him?
I doubt. I mean, maybe at like Reagan Airport, but otherwise.
I think that's right. I think it's probably doubtful. Reagan Airport, maybe at like JFK, right? Like he's at the airport in like a liberal city. Like I can see them come up, but he says people say that you're, don't say that. Like, you know, that what Mika standing up from, don't even go there.
I also have a hard time thinking anybody ever liked him, honestly.
Isn't that why he went on MSNBC? Because no one liked him in Congress? Anyway, go ahead and let's hear him explain a little bit more. Cut four.
It is so funny, George. You and I were conservatives and are conservatives, but we were conservatives when some of these women on Fox News who call us liberals were still playing with their Barbies, of course, Eva Braun edition. Yeah. We were fighting for conservative values.
Okay, Joe. Like, what? Like, by the way, if you're Mattel and you make Barbie, do you think they went to check to, like, make sure they don't make an Eva Braun one? Do you think they were worried? They were like, tell me, can someone just check? Like, you know, we don't make an Eva Braun edition of Barbie. I don't know. It shows you how warped Joe Scarborough is that, one, he still thinks he's a conservative fighting for conservative values. I'd love to know which ones. And I think he thinks that, like, he's in the right here. And the one thing he objects to is when people recognize him in public and then try to talk to him. Was it kind of like Ellen DeGeneres? Remember how, like, she had this, like, reputation for being, like, the nicest person ever? And then turns out she was, like, super nasty to everyone. It could be exactly like that. I don't know. He lives they accuse conservatives of being this alternate universe, but they're certainly the ones in an alternate universe. All right. We've got a lot more to get to. I want to make sure that we change up subject when we come back from break. Before we go to break, however, Jared, I did want to check back in with you about the Nassau Beach Inn, because they've got some great deals that they're offering right now if you're booking in the spring months.
Yeah. And you may be looking outside at the rain and thinking, oh, this would not be a good day to be at the Nassau Beach Inn. But you're wrong, because you could stay cozy in your room with the fireplace and the giant picture window. You can still enjoy all that the Nauset Beach Inn has to offer. Every room has queen beds, fireplace, a nice picture window. You can't go wrong. And you know what? You can go outside. You can walk along the beach. You can brave the rain. You can sit by the fire pits. You can really do anything you want to. My wife and I, we love the Nauset Beach Inn. Went down there in December in the off season on the Cape, which is fantastic. We enjoyed being able to just walk along the beach, and you can enjoy this for a great price, because right now you can book your April stay at the Nassau Beach Inn from $249.99 a night, and in May rates are from $259.99 a night. Don't delay, because these rooms go fast. Nassau Beach Inn is pet friendly. It has a view from every room, and check-in is contactless. To reserve your Ocean View room now, go to NausetBeachInn.com. That's NausetBeachInn.com, and hop on these spring rates now.
Hi, it's Toby from Cape Gunworks. I'm taking all your firearm and self-defense questions every Tuesday. Join Grace and me for 2A Tuesday, Tuesdays at 2 p.m.
This is the Grace Curley Show.
We are back on the Grace Curley Show. I'm not Grace Curley. I'm Aaron Chadbourne, here all week while Grace is on spring break. We hope that she and Will, the whole family, are having a great vacation. She'll come back rested on Monday. But until then, I'm holding down the fort. You know, with RFK Jr. announcing his VP pick earlier this week, it's really means that the field's pretty much established. You've got Biden, Kamala, you've got RFK Jr. and this lady no one ever heard of, who used to be married to one of the Google founders, Nicole Shanahan. And now the question's on about who Trump might pick. And that's what inspired today's poll question. Today's poll question is brought to you by J.J. Manning Auctioneers. Whether residential, commercial, or land, J.J. Manning can get your property sold now. To learn more, contact Charlie Gill at 800-521-0111 or jjmanning.com. With over 16,000 sales and satisfied clients, you can be the next one. All right, Jared, what is today's poll question and what are the answers thus far?
Today's poll question, which you can vote in at gracecurlyshow.com, is who do you think Trump is going to pick for vice president? Tulsi Gabbard, Kristi Noem, Mike Pence, Vivek Ramaswamy, Marco Rubio, Tim Scott, Elise Stefanik, or other?
So the question is, which one do you think he's going to pick? It's not which one should he pick, right? It's which one is he going to pick? All right, so this is a prediction. I don't think it's Marco Rubio. I don't know who brought that up. I don't know. I think I'm going to say Tim Scott. I think Tim Scott is likely who he's going to pick.
23% of the audience says Tim Scott. That's good for second place. 24% say other. 18% for Tulsi Gabbard. 16% for Kristi Noem. 9% for Vivek. 5% for Rubio. 4% for Stefanik. 1% for Mike Pence.
Yeah, I have
Pence apparently voting in this poll question.
I put him on the list just as a joke because I thought that was funny.
You never know with Trump, though, honestly.
You do never know with Trump. I guess I didn't. There are other people that I could have picked. So I'd be interested who the other, because the other category is taking more than the choices that were listed. But I imagine there's diversity in that. Or did we leave someone obvious off? There might be someone obvious. Chris Christie, not in the running. And he also is not in the running to be the presidential candidate for the No Labels Party, announcing yesterday that he will not run for president for No Labels. He won't do anything that might possibly increase the chances that Donald Trump becomes president. Here's the thing. Nobody wanted Chris Christie to be president anyway. Like, was that not clear to him? I love these people that are like, oh, after being courted, despite massive public demand to the contrary, I regret to inform you that I will not be standing for president. It's like the billionaire, the governor of North Dakota?
Doug Burgum.
Like, what are you doing? Like, nobody was ever voting for you. Like, I hear you. You come from a small community where everyone knows who you are, and they're like, hey, you'd be a great president. Someone texted me yesterday during the show. I won't say who it was. She's a loyal listener of Grace's. She texted during the show and said, I'd be a great president, and she laid out why. And one of the reasons is really to Emma Foley's credit was that we were including pop culture and talking about Diddy. And Diddy being on the run in the suspected sex trafficking and drug trafficking and just all around ickiness that seems to be following him and these stories that are surfacing that are just gross. But, you know, like, thank you. Like, thank you to the texter. However, like, that doesn't fool me into thinking that I could actually run for president and that anyone would care or anyone would vote for it. But you have these people like Chris Christie are just like, oh, like, this is my moment. History is calling me. And maybe it's because he had a chance. Back during the Obama years, he had an opening. And timing in politics is everything. That was your moment, bro. Like, and you missed it. You can't catch that wave again. Just ask Jeb Bush. Jeb Bush passed on running when he was governor of Florida. His brother ran instead, much to his chagrin. And George W. Bush was president for 8 years. But Jebra. You missed the boat. Like, that was your moment. Your moment has passed. Now you're never going to be president. And Chris Christie, same for you. No one wanted you to run for president as a Republican, and no one cares if you run in the No Labels. You probably wouldn't take any votes away from Donald Trump because no one's voting for you. And I mean, just the people that, like, just the protest vote, like, they weren't going to vote for Trump anyway. And so instead of voting for RFK or for whoever, like, they're going to vote for you. Okay. Like, but you're not actually going to influence the outcome of the election. The audacity, the ego on these people. Grace asked me once, she was like, don't you think that they know in their heart of hearts? Like, I think they actually believe they have a shot. They think that the American people are just dying for them to be a choice and they need to vote for them. And, like, sorry, Chris, like, nope, no one cares. No one cares. But he's out, and I don't think he's going to be Trump's vice president either. But I'm interested. If you have other thoughts, you can call into the Grace Curley Show. 844-500-4242 is the number. We'd love to hear your other suggestions for who Trump should pick, who Trump will pick. If they weren't on our list on the poll question, you can still take the poll question, gracecurleyshow.com. I am Aaron Chadbourne, in for Grace Curley. We'll have a lot more show, 844-500-4242, when we come back.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria Studio.
We're back on the Grace Curley Show. I am Aaron Chadbourne, in for Grace. Someone who won't be joining us today is Sam Bankman-Fried, sentenced to 25 years in prison. 25 years. Do you think he'll do all 25 years, though? Did you see this thing? There was a parole board where two of the members just resigned because the guy they let out on parole went right away and assaulted his former girlfriend's son. And I mean, the trend these days is really for people not to do jail time. Do you think he'll get like special accommodation, maybe for his diet?
Are you ready for some meatball?
I just don't see him staying there for 25 years. Like, what, how many years do you think he'll serve? That could be a poll question. How many of the 25 years do you think Sam Bankman-Fried will actually serve? Because I don't know. I just think, but I do want to be the first to say that if we're told that he killed himself in prison, I'm pretty sure Sam Bankman-Fried did not kill himself. I haven't wished you yet, by the way. Someone reminded me today that Easter is coming up this weekend. So tomorrow is Good Friday, which this just really crept up on me, which is funny because I feel like Easter is really late this year. But it is Easter on Sunday, and that got me thinking about the economy. And so yesterday, too, we had those cuts of Karine Jean-Pierre when she was on talk radio in North Carolina. First got asked about the president, whether he has dementia, which she just couldn't imagine anyone would have the audacity to ask such an impolite question. And then they asked her about inflation and the cost of things. And so let's go to truth teller, soothsayer Janet Yellen to get a sense for how things are costing this Easter. Take cut nine.
The president is indicated, and I certainly agree, that getting the cost of living down should be a number one economic priority. And he's proposed many different ways of doing this. But one important way is by lowering energy prices and diminishing their volatility.
This is from Joe Biden's Treasury Secretary, former chair of the Federal Reserve, who told us that inflation was transitory, something she later had to, in the words of Jamal Bowman, walk back. But so how's that going? How is that getting inflation under control, lowering energy costs going? How is it looking this Easter? Go ahead with cut seven, please, Jared.
Easter is this weekend, and many Americans will spend an average of close to $200 per person for the holiday.
So how will that impact your celebrations? Jen Sullivan breaks down the cost.
Grab your baskets and your wallet, because Easter spending this year is one for the record books.
Easter is certainly a popular holiday for many consumers.
Catherine Cullen with the National Retail Federation says Americans will shell out about $180 per person on Easter-related items this year.
Huh. Easter costs are surging. That's a lot of money, though. $170 per person. What are people buying? Is that chocolate eggs? Is the price of chocolate up? I mean, the price of everything is up. Is that the cost of meat? $179 per person? That's a lot, Jared. Does your family go all out on Easter?
We have a big family, and we all go over to my mom's, and yeah, I'm sure they spend a lot of money. But
what are the big ticket items, though?
Well, you know, lamb is probably not cheap. We usually have lamb. Ham's probably also not inexpensive.
My family's Greek, so we celebrate Easter twice. We do it once on American Easter and once on Orthodox Easter, because we're both, which is fun. There used to be two Easter bunnies. So Easter was always more expensive in my household. And what was great is the two Easter bunnies did not shop at the same stores, because I think that it would have been easy to figure out that perhaps there was something amiss. about the Easter Bunny if they both shop at the same stores. So we used to get two Easter baskets, and they had different chocolate bunnies, whatever. But so chocolate is probably up. Lamb, definitely up. What else? Like, what else do you serve? Like rice? Like salad? Like, everything is up. That's up. $180 a person.
That does seem kind of steep. Although that report was from KXLY in Washington State, so it may be more expensive there than some other places. But
why? Because they need like organic, grass fed, free range.
Yeah, I don't know.
That could be. So, I mean, but here's the thing about the reason we bring this story up is because I just still think that Janet Yellen is completely, completely out of touch. Like, they actually don't. They don't think, they don't realize that people are hurting. They have no idea how much it's costing for people to do anything. And so, like, they're shocked when a TV news anchor brings it up or a radio interviewer with KJP says, like, hey, how are you responding to inflation? And her first go-to is to blame Russia for increasing energy costs, which notice Janet Yellen then says, oh, no, we're bringing energy costs down. Like, internally, they don't even have their message straight, their story straight, because they don't know that it's hurting people in their pocketbooks. And what's the overall impact of that? I think we know from Cut 5.
Despite President Joe Biden holding rallies across the country in recent weeks to tout the state of the U.S. economy, his message still may not be resonating with many Americans. According to a new Fox News poll, more than half of registered voters say they would trust Donald Trump more with the economy than President Biden, and by something of a significant margin, 56% to 41%.
So without, like, tell me you're an NBC anchor without telling me you're an NBC anchor. Listen to how he says Donald Trump. But Donald Trump, like, he's surprised. He's surprised that people trust Donald Trump more with the economy than they do Joe Biden. I don't know, Jared. I'm not particularly surprised. You know why? Because I remember how much it cost me to fill up my gas tank when Donald Trump was president. I know how much it cost me yesterday. Like these people, like, they're just so, is that the thing? Like, they're just out of touch. They have no idea.
Well, I'm sure it's going to get a lot less expensive since we're all buying a new bridge for Baltimore. I'm sure that's not going to increase our costs on anything.
I predicted this yesterday, right? Or when did the bridge collapse? Tuesday? On Tuesday, Biden, the first thing he said is the federal government's going to pay for it. And I'm going to work with Congress to make sure that happens. And I kind of said, not so fast, Mr. President, because first of all, I don't know if you've been paying attention, but Joe Biden doesn't really have the friendliest relationship with Congress these days. Not that he ever has. So I don't see it sailing through the House. And then, you know, lawmakers being lawmakers, they can't help themselves. They're, of course, going to need something for themselves if they're going to bail out Baltimore. So the price tag on this bridge bill is going to be huge.
And you know there's going to be funding for Ukraine in there.
Of course there is. Of course there's going to be funding for Ukraine. There's going to be, I mean, we probably are. We probably are spending more to build bridges in Ukraine than we are across the United States. I would take the over on that one. They're going to try to pass this. On my social media feed, I'm not sure, maybe it's because of who I'm friends with and who's posting, but people are like, well, what about the insurance companies that insured the shipping companies and everything? And that's a good question. I imagine it'll still come up short. The bigger thing, though, here, Jared, is we've got to open back up the port, like dredging the channel, getting the debris gone. Like, I absolutely agree the federal government should pay for that. But if there are alternate routes to get you from the harbor and off, for the moment, like, why don't we just kind of go without the bridge and see how we do, right? Like, let's get the port back open. Let's get the ships moving. And then we can figure out if we need the bridge and who's going to pay for it. I just don't think that Biden and his leadership are really going to put us on a path to paying for it anytime soon. I think we're probably safe. But, you know, let's just open up the port. And, like, let's focus on that, because without opening up the port, we're going to have a lot more expensive Easter, or what holiday comes after Easter? Memorial Day. Memorial Day is going to be out of control because we need that commerce to flow. 844-500-4242, the number here on the Grace Curley Show. I'm Aaron Chadbourne, in for Grace. Let's go ahead to the phone lines and talk to Ron. Ron, you're on the Grace Curley Show.
Aaron, how are you?
Doing good, Ron. What's up?
Just feeling a little resentful today. About the Sam Bankman-Fried stuff. I saw something this morning where one, I think it was on Fox, they were saying that maybe he was going to serve 110 years, and then there were a couple of different ranges of punishment for him. But then his defense was saying that they wanted to have less than 5 years because they're calling it a victimless crime. But it's just a, yeah, I know. It's a Biden shell game. From what I heard, they're trying to make the argument that the investors are going to be made whole through the bankruptcy process. Well, number one, where does that money come from? But number two, it's a Biden shell game because all that a majority of that money went to the Democrat Party for the midterm elections. And they're not going to give any of that money back. The politicians aren't going to give any of that money back. And on top of that, I'm willing to bet that Joe Biden's going to pardon Sam Bankman-Fried.
Mm. I mean, that's a fair question, and thanks for the call. Appreciate it. I don't know. I don't think Biden will pardon him. Maybe on his way out. Maybe if he doesn't get reelected, that could be what he does. But I think more likely, like again, I think they're more likely going to suicide him because I think they don't want him to speak out about all the Democrats he was in bed with. It's interesting. The feds had recommended a sentence of a little bit longer. Like he still could have faced up to 150 years, but the prosecutors recommended 40 to 50 years due to the extraordinary dimensions of his crime. He only got 25. When you compare it to other people, Bernie Madoff received a 150-year sentence. The CEO of Enron, Jeff Skilling, he was sentenced to 24 years. And Theranos founder Elizabeth Holmes was sentenced to 11 years. Also interesting, and I didn't know this, the judge in this case is Judge Lewis Kaplan, who was also, where do we remember him from? That's right, the recent defamation lawsuit brought by E. Jean Carroll against Donald Trump. So, I mean, the judge in this case did land on 25 years, which is Enron level. So I don't know. Do you think what he did is worse than Enron? I guess that's the real thing of it. But I mean, you're absolutely right. People are not going to be made whole. This was not a victimless crime. So I agree with you completely. All right. If you'd like to call in, 844-500-4242. That's the number here on the Grace Curley Show. Or you can text Curley to 617-213-1066. We'll take more of your calls, your comments, when we come back here on the Grace Curley Show. I'm Aaron Chadbourne, in for Grace.
The Grace Curley Show will be right back. This is the Grace Curley Show.
We're back on the Grace Curley Show. I am Aaron Chadbourne. I'm in for Grace. During the break, I was just looking at the TV, and I have a few different shows up. Had CNN on. Susan Collins is on there talking about the life and legacy of Joe Lieberman. Former Senator Joe Lieberman, of course, passed away yesterday. And he was most famous, I think, for running as Al Gore's vice presidential running mate. And then soon after that, remember he lost his Democrat primary for his Senate seat in Connecticut, and then said, okay, fine, and ran as an independent and won and became an independent. And that's the thing like that I've been thinking about with Joe Lieberman, who I'm sure I disagree with him a lot over the years, but he was somewhat of a centrist. Imagine him today in the current U.S. Senate or in Congress, and just how, I mean, I don't think they would have him as a member. He was a Jewish member of Congress. He was strong on Israel. I don't think that the squad would be very happy to count him as a member. Do you, Jared?
No, not at all. He would, at the worst, or at best, be shunned by the squad. At worst, they'd probably try to Santos him.
He also was quite personable, which you like. I miss the old days of like these like charming, like older, like senator dudes that like were just like good people. Like he was very dry, but it had a great sense of humor, and he would tell jokes. And I attended when I was in college, he was running for president, so it must have been, I think he ran for president again after Gore lost. He ran in 2004, the year that Kerry got the nomination, And he came and there was a filming on campus when I was in college of Hardball. And we had each of the presidential candidates come and they filmed it. And as a student, you got to attend. You got to ask a question. That's where there was footage of Vivek Ramaswamy asking a question to Al Sharpton saying, "You're not a politician. Like, you've never held office." Right. That went viral. That was that series. So after that, I met Joe Lieberman. I got to attend the reception with him. And he was like singing Frank Sinatra. Don't tell Taylor. I don't want him to get jealous. But he was just a charming guy. But he was someone that you could actually get along with and talk to. He'd listen to the other side. You know, he'd tell you why he agreed or disagreed. I just don't think the Democrats, I don't think they make them like that anymore. Or they don't accept them. They run them out when they do. Look at how they treat Joe Manchin, right? Like, that's exactly, I think that's where he would be if he were in the Senate today. And some can argue that you don't like it when the Senate was chummy and when they got along, but at least they like got stuff done or they'd listen. And there were Democrats who were willing to say, you know, their version of compromise wasn't Republicans, you need to cave, which is what compromise means today, whether you're in the state house or whether you're in Congress. The idea of compromise is always Republicans have to move off their position and give Democrats more. That's what compromise means these days. But back then, Joe Lieberman, and he got along well with John McCain. John McCain almost picked him to be his running mate, which I think was a bad idea. I think it's a similar theory of the case as to Trump picking Tulsi Gabbard, although I think Gabbard is a little bit closer to Trump's position than perhaps Lieberman was to McCain. But I don't think it was ever going to happen, right? Because I don't think he ever actually would do that and take that position. But again, if he were in the Senate today, I think he would be persona non grata. I think he would be the most hated person in there. I think we'd be hearing Joe and Mika and Rachel and all these people denounce him. How dare he? How dare he work with Republicans and enable Republicans? Just the same stuff we've heard about Joe Manchin, who, I don't know if you noticed, isn't running again. Kristen Sinema, who, because she dared be a little bit outspoken on the border, heaven forbid the senator from Arizona actually agrees with Republicans that the border and the crisis at the border needs to be dealt with. Nope, that's it. Disqualifying. Can't be in the Senate anymore. I think that would be the same thing for Joe Lieberman. And I'm sure Joe Lieberman, he was a hawk, and there are some things that we're going to disagree about. But I think, you know, with his passing, it's just like you have to pause and think back on when there used to be some Democrats who would at least give credence to Republicans, see them as partners, and actually try to work with them. So anyway, heartfelt sympathies to Joe Lieberman's family, to his colleagues. Definitely think it's an end of an era. And I don't know. I think it was a better time when you had people like him in the Democrat Party. I'd rather see more Democrats like him than what we see nowadays, than the Jamal Bowman, like, you know, gaslighting, I pulled the fire alarm because I had to rush to a vote, liars, right? I'd rather have someone who actually, you know, believed in saying what they meant, meaning what they say. Although I do remember there was a lot of criticism for him when he agreed to be Al Gore's vice president and he had to change his position. He was way more conservative than Gore on a number of things, but to be his vice president and lend him that credibility, he had to kind of contort himself. So, I mean, he was still a career politician after all. Like, let's not hold him to like any, you know, normal people standards. But as far as politicians go, as far as people serving in the Senate or the House go, like, I think he was, you know, better than a lot of them, but still a politician at heart. So I guess it's a sliding scale. I guess we won't be too easy on him. All right. That's all we got right now. We're going to have to go to break. When we come back, we'll dig a little bit more into what's happening in today's news. I haven't talked about the royal family today. Maybe that'll come up. We'll take your calls and your text, 844-500-4242. The number here on The Grace Curley Show. Grace is off. I'm Aaron Chadbourne, in for Grace.